and we begin a new year in the book of 2 Kings as we continue our study through the Old Testament. So we're in 2 Kings, and we happen to be in chapter 5, and really and truly probably one of the most fun stories in the book of 2 Kings. We are learning about the life of Elisha, the prophet who took over for Elijah, the prophet. Kind of get those guys all confused. But Elisha takes over, and he begins his ministry. And he begins, when he launches out into his ministry, with several miraculous events that take place that kind of give the stamp of God upon his ministry and upon his, you know, really upon his life. And so we've studied several of those so far, and each one of them really kind of is a picture of the grace of God, which is, you know, just to see how God's grace brings it all about. So we have already discussed several of them, and tonight we pick up an interesting story about a guy named Naaman. And so this story is actually loaded with all kinds of stuff, though, I need to warn you. It is, in its context, an amazing story. But in its, if you will, in its application for you and for me, there's also some pretty cool things that we can learn by looking at the story of Naaman. And so, you know, so that we don't just look at it and say, wow, that was a cool miracle 4,000 years ago. Wish I could have been there. Let's take a look. We're going to look at what really happened, the actual story, and then let's see if we fit, if there's any way that we fit in this story, if it applies to our life at all, okay? So let's take a look in the book of 2 Kings, chapter 5, verse 1. It says, now, Naaman, and let's find out a little bit about who this guy Naaman is. Okay, number one, he's a commander of the army of Syria, of the king of Syria. Secondly, he was a great man and also an honorable man. So we've learned that he's a commander, he's great, he's honorable. He was a great honorable man in the eyes of his master. Because by him, look at this, the Lord had given victory to Syria. Isn't that interesting? Not to the nation of Israel, but to Syria. He was also, look at this, a mighty man of valor. So we've learned four things right off the bat. We've, you know, by our context, it tells us he's a commander of the army of the king of Syria. He's a great man. He's an honorable man. He's a mighty man of valor. And so could we then surmise then that this is a pretty important guy? Could we also say that this guy has a lot going for him? Would we agree with that? This guy, I mean, he's got it together. He's one of the big cheese right here. He's a man of valor. He's a man of honor. You know, he's also a great man. He's esteemed by his fellows, his fellow men. So that's a pretty cool beginning for a guy that appears to have it all. He's got it all together. But we left off with a comma. It says, but he's a leper. Not a leopard, but a leper. Okay? So what does that mean? That he has leprosy. So this man struggles with the disease of leprosy. Now, as I've shared with you guys before, leprosy is this very foul disease, and at that time there was no cure for it. Leprosy was a skin disease that would begin, it usually began on the extremities, somewhere on the outer edges, you know, elbow, it could begin, you know, on the knee or on the toes or on the fingers, the ears, even on the nose. It was a disease that would begin very, very small, and it would just begin to eat the skin and the flesh away. Very small in its beginning, but then it begins to grow, and as it does, it becomes very foul, you start to stink. And oftentimes in Israel now, in the land of Israel, you would be considered unclean. You would have to be isolated out with other lepers in what is known as a leper colony, right? And so there, these people, these you know, men and women would literally just rot away. Their lives would be desolate. They would only have other lepers to hang around with. Interesting, because as the skin would start to rot away, it would obviously would die and would grow numb. And so one of the problems that they had in leper colonies was rats. So the, while you're eating, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night and you see a rat gnawing away on your thumb and you can't even see it happening. I mean, that's a bummer, right? And so if you were in the land of Israel and you were walking and the breeze was blowing in a direction, people would literally walk upwind of you, and you had to yell out ahead of yourself, "Unclean, unclean," so that people would know that you're a leper. Oftentimes wrap themselves in cloth, you know, the ugly part of their bodies would be wrapped up. And so isn't it interesting how our story begins about Naaman, who's a guy that has it all? He's got it together, but he has leprosy. So interesting. Now, what's fascinating about this guy, though, is that it appears that it was a case that he was able to cover up. Because if it was something like, you know, in his face or his ear was being eaten off, I don't think they would let him continue to be a commander of the army. So it's obvious that his leprosy was in such a place, or he had such a case, that his uniform probably covered it up. Interesting. So hold that thought. A guy that really has it all together, but in a crazy sort of way, his life's fallen apart. Literally. And so watch what happens now in verse 2. And the Syrians had gone out on raids, and they brought back a captive, a young girl from the land of Israel. So she, this young girl, waited on Naaman's wife. And then she said to her mistress. So now, understand this. This man, Naaman, commander of the army, great noble man, but he has leprosy. They go out on a raid, which they would often do, these armies. And in so doing, they snatch up a young girl, kidnap a young girl. Bring her, an Israeli, bring her back to his place where he turns her into a slave. So kind of an interesting guy that we're learning what he is. So here, this young girl now is turned into the servant girl of the household, snatched away from her family, snatched away from her parents, and turned into a servant in the land of Syria. And so watch what happens, though. She said in verse 3 to her mistress, "Oh, if only my master," referring to Naaman, "were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy." Now, I want you to kind of look at this next character that we just met. We've met Naaman. We've just told that he has a wife. But we've also been told that Naaman went on a raid, kidnaps a young girl, young Israeli, and puts her to work in his house. Now, do you read anywhere in that particular passage where she is complaining, that she is bitter about her situation, that she is angry, that she's tried to kill Naaman's wife, that she's tried to kill Naaman? Do you see that anywhere in the text? No. What we do see is a girl who is living out her faith, who obviously realized, okay, I'm in an ugly situation here. I don't like it, but I'm going to make the best out of this. And in the midst of this very difficult situation, she makes mention, "Oh, if only my master could meet," she's referring to Elisha, "the prophet from Samaria, he could heal him." Not kill him, heal him. Isn't that interesting? I find it fascinating, and I bring that to your attention only because how many times do we find ourselves in a very difficult situation we don't like? Maybe in a, you know, circumstance, whether we created it or whether it was thrust upon us, and we allow bitterness, we allow discontent, we allow our own feelings and our emotions to get in the way of being used by God. And here's a girl in a very difficult situation. She's saying, "Well, I may not like it, but I'm not going to become bitter. I'm going to become better. And she refers him back to the nation of Israel. So she's actually living out her faith. Radical. Now, if she would have become bitter, do you think she would have ever done it? I don't think so. So very, very interesting. I want you to remember this girl because we're going to talk about her at the end also of the study here. So Naaman then, verse 4, went in and told his master, saying, thus and thus said the girl who's from the land of Israel. So this girl is a faithful witness, right where God needed her to be, right where God wanted her to be, God uses her. And so the king of Israel, of Syria then says, well, go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel. Now, at this particular time, Ben-Hadad is the king of Syria. He was put into place by Elijah, if you can remember way back when we talked about that. And at this time, in the land of Israel, Jehoram was the king. So this is, if you kind of, when you get home and you want to look at who was kings and you're trying to track the timing of this, these are the two kings. So Ben-Hadad says, I'll write a letter. And so I want you to see what's happening. Here is a guy that has a deadly disease that will literally eat him alive, and his only hope is going to come from a prophet in Israel. Does that give you some hints? Okay? His only hope is coming from this prophet in Israel. And so he departed. He took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. So let me give you an idea. The weight of that is about 750 pounds of silver and 150 pounds of gold. So he's going there ready to pay for a miracle. I've heard this miracle. This girl is staying in my house. I kidnapped her. She tells me about this prophet, so I'm going to go find out. Takes a bunch of change of, you know, fine designer clothing. So he brings this, he departs to this, and verse 6, then he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which said, now be advised when this letter comes to you, that I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy. And it happened, but let me ask you guys a question. Did the girl say that the king could heal him? No. Who was the one that could heal him? The prophet, okay? Doesn't name him, but the prophet from Israel. Not the king of Israel, the prophet in Israel. Okay? So a little misled. But he did, you know, the king of Syria didn't know who that was. And it happened, verse 7, when the king of Israel read the letter, that he tore his clothes and he said, what? Am I God to kill and to make alive that this man sends a man to me to heal him of his leprosy? Therefore, please consider and see how he seeks a quarrel with me. So the king gets the letter, and it says, heal this man. The king says, what? Well, I'm not a miracle worker. What's he talking about? I know what he's doing. He sent this guy to me because I'm not going to be able to help him, and he's picking a fight with me. Because when I send him back saying, I can't help you, it's all a part of his plan to pick a fight. So this insecure little, you know, king thinks that this guy's trying to, you know, pick a fight with him. So, it was in verse 8, when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes. And understand, tearing of the clothes is just this, fortunately for all of us, it's a custom that is long gone. And but it was just like, I'm seriously stressed out, you know. And so he tears his clothes. So Elisha hears about it, okay? So that he sent to the king, saying, why have you torn your clothes? Now watch this. Please, let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. So Elisha knew all about it. God had already revealed it to Elisha. There's a dude coming your direction. The king's torn his clothes. He's stressed out. He thinks somebody's trying to pick a fight with him. But I put a girl in Syria strategically. I allowed it to take place. She was a faithful witness for me in a very difficult, ugly situation. I put her there because I needed her to be used. She was faithful. I've sent a man to you now. And Elisha, the king's getting stressed out, so send the king a letter and tell him that he's not the guy that he's supposed to be seeing anyway. You need him to come to you. And so God's working this amazing plan. You need to see all of these things that are working. And so Naaman then, verse 9, went with his horses and his chariot, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him. Elisha says, carrying all that kind of weight of gold there, it had to be an entourage. Now, understand, from where he came and, you know, where he talked to the king and where Elisha is staying, you know, it's a pretty good ride. You know, remember, they're all on mules and camels and all that kind of stuff. So he comes to Elisha's door. And understand, from Syria, from the area that he's already come, it's probably a good 150 miles that he's traveled so far. And so he comes to the door, and Elisha says, oh, my goodness, it's Naaman's here. He's got this huge entourage. Somebody go answer the door. Now, isn't that interesting? Here's a very powerful man, commander of the armies of Syria. And Elisha says, I'm not answering it. You go answer it. Sends a servant. Why would he do that? Watch and see. And so he sends a messenger to him saying, you tell him, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times. And your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean. So the dude says, you sure you don't want to go tell him, Elisha? Elisha says, no, you go tell him. Go tell him what I said. Just tell him, go over to the Jordan River, which, understand, from where Naaman's house is at, it's another 32-mile ride back to the Jordan River. You go tell him. From Samaria all the way over to the Jordan, 32 more miles. Dude's already come 150-plus miles. You tell him. Why don't you go tell him? No, you just do what I said. I don't want to talk to this guy at this point. Now, follow along, okay? So he goes back over. In verse 11, it says, and Naaman became furious. And he went away and he said, indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call upon the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. So let me ask you guys a question. Did Naaman come with expectations? Yes. First of all, he was expecting to be healed, right? Because this girl who was faithful. But did he have an expectation of how it was going to go down? Yes. He thought he was going to a Benny Hinn meeting. That he was going to come out and say, hey, you know, a big show because he's got his whole entourage. Wave his hand, poof, I'm healed. He had, 150 miles to imagine how this is all going to go down. Plus, understand, I'm an important guy here. What are you doing sending your servant to the door? You come out here. I've killed men, eaten men for lunch, they're smaller than you. You come out, wave your hand around, make a big show in front of all my guys so that I can go back to the land of Syria healed, and I can tell them about the big spectacle that just took place. So would you agree that that's probably a little bit of pride? Maybe a lot of pride. I would agree that that is. So, he's coming for a miracle from the prophet that lives in Israel. He wants to buy it with gold and silver and clothing. And he wants it to be a big, huge show for himself. So keep all of that in mind, okay, as we put this all together. And so, verse 12, he says, are not the Abanah and the Farfar and the rivers of Damascus better than the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? In other words, can't I do it my own way? And you can almost picture him singing the song. I wanted to do it my way. You can almost imagine it, right? Aren't there many roads to get this little, miracle? Are you beginning to get a picture of this? And so he turned, and he went away in a rage. I wanted it my way. And I wanted to do it. I want him to make a big deal out of it. And so the great leader is getting ready to walk away. He was that close to a miracle, that close to being healed, and he's going to walk away from it. Fortunately, he's got, you know, his servants are actually smarter than he is. In verse 13, and his servants came, they came near to him, and they spoke to him, and they said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it?" So let me ask you guys a question. What if he would have told him, "Here's what you need to do. Bench press 500 pounds in front of all your guys. You do that 3 times and you'll be healed." Do you think he would have done it? Let me do that. So everybody would look at him and see, what would that have done to his already large ego? Inflated it? Would we agree with that? Yes, if he would have told me to do something great, I could have done it. That would have just inflated his ego even more. But Elisha is in the process of going, deflating this guy's ego. So watch what happens. So my father, I mean, if he'd have told you to do something great, wouldn't you have done it? Now watch this. Wisdom. How much more then when he says to you, just go and wash and be clean? I mean, it's a no-brainer if you ask me. It seems like a simple thing. I mean, he asked you to do something great. You would have done it. He asked you to do something menial. Why don't you do it? So, verse 14, he went down and he dipped 7 times into the Jordan according to the saying of the man of God. Notice that. Not according to the unnamed servant that came to the door. You catch that? According to what the man of God had told him to do. And watch what happens. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. So can you imagine? He goes down and he gets another 32-mile ride, gets over to the Jordan River. He's probably shaking his head going, "This is so stupid. I can't believe this." 32-mile ride. I mean, he's got 32 miles to think. The jerk didn't even have the courtesy to come to the door and tell me. Sends his servant. Who does he think he is? Does he know who I am? Gets down off of his horse or his mule or his camel, whatever he rode. Gets in. And then, "Come on, sir, I mean, please, just try it." All of his guys coaxing him. Gets into the water. He probably dips down one time, stands up, looks at him. By now, understand, this group of guys, he's had to expose himself to them. He's had to expose his leprosy. If it was hidden underneath his clothing, the clothing is off, they know. They see the ugliness now. He dips down, comes back up. "Well, I'm still there." "It's a joke." "All right, one more time," dips down. "Well, I can't believe it. It's not going to work." Can you imagine all of this going on in this guy's mind? This is so crazy. "I'm going to go kill that dude." Dips down 6 times. Comes back up. He said 7. I'm not doing it. "Get back. Come on, do it." You can imagine this battle that goes on. Finally, he goes down 7 times. "If it doesn't work this time, I'm going to kill him myself." Comes up 7 times, healed. Instantly. Like a baby's flesh. Literally, that could be translated, he was like born again. Completely new, fresh skin. The leprosy is gone. It's interesting. So each time he had to take a dip, it was humiliating, as well as it was a point of obedience. You see? And finally, on the 7th one, he comes up. The number of completion, he comes up and he's completely healed. Now watch. After this takes place, verse 15, and he returned another 32 miles back to the man of God. Okay? So now he goes 32 more miles back to the man of God, he and all of his aides, and he came and he stood before him. Let me ask you guys a question. The 32-mile ride there was probably filled with bitterness and resentment and anger. What do you think the 32-mile ride back was like? I'll bet you it was a totally different ride. Don't you agree? He's born again. He's got brand new skin, brand new flesh. He's been healed. He's on his way back. I'll bet you that that ride, the ride over probably took about, 10 days. The ride back probably took 10 minutes. Because he's a new man. He's probably all of his age. Dude's probably riding without a shirt now, right? Going over, he's all covered up. Now he's probably got a decent sunburn on his way back. And you can imagine that the things they're talking about now are way different than what they talked about on the way over. On the way over, everybody's going, just stay away from him. Don't say anything. On the way back, he's probably just telling everybody how wonderful things are. So he comes back before him. And he says, indeed, verse 15, part 2, indeed, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Now, therefore, please take a gift from your servant. So he was a idol-worshipping guy in Syria, and now who did he just confess? The God of Israel. So could we all agree that this man has been converted? Interesting. Watch what happens. And so he says, Elisha says to him, now Elisha's talking to the guy. You see this? Elisha says, as the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will receive nothing from you. And he urged him to take it. And he says, please take this stuff from me. And he says, no. He refused to take it. Because he says, look, this miracle wasn't from me. This miracle was from God. You don't pay for this. This is a free gift to you. Okay? And so Naaman then said, well, then if not, please let your servant be given 2 mule loads of earth, dirt. For your servant will no longer offer either burnt offering or sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. And so he says, let me just, take enough dirt back home so that when I'm in the land of Syria, I can worship on the soil of Israel. Because I'm going to go back and I'm going to worship the God of Israel. I want to do it on the dirt that is from here. I'd say that's a radical conversion. And then he says to him, watch this, and I love this part. He says, yet in this thing may the Lord pardon your servant. When my master goes into the temple of Rimmon to worship there, and this is the god of the storm and the rain, he's kind of like the god, he's kind of like Baal of Syria. So when the king goes in to worship in this temple, and when I bow down my hand, and I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, when I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord please pardon your servant in this thing. So in other words, look, I've got to go back. I got a job to do. I'm a government official. I'm the king's bodyguard when he goes into the temple. And when I go in, I got to bow down. And so when he goes in, may God forgive me. I'm not doing it with my heart. I'm just doing it as a part of my job. You hear what that says? I'm going to worship the God of Israel, but I have to take my master into this place. Now check this out. And so Elisha then said to him, verse 19, what, are you crazy? You need to quit your job. You can't work in a secular environment like that. What do you think this is? How in the world are you going to worship God if you do that job? You need to quit. Just stay here. Is that what it says? Interesting. He said, hey, go in peace. So he departed from him a short distance. So did Elisha tell him to quit his job? Did Elisha tell him that he can't do this? He says, look, God knows your heart. Besides that, we need people like this in high government place. We need people like that in secular environment. So you go and do your job, you worship God, and I would venture to say that pretty soon, when he got back, the king probably looked at him and said, dude, what happened to you while you were gone? Your leprosy's gone, but you're different. Something's up with you. Do you think that he could have been a very effective witness for the God of Israel working in that secular environment? I think so. And so he departs from him. So now things are going to change. But let's take a look at how this all changed, and then I want to come back, and we're going to talk about it. Okay, but Gehazi, remember him? He's the guy that's been Elisha's right-hand man. He's the guy that went to the little boy that was dead. He couldn't raise him up. He's not following instructions very well. There's a problem with Gehazi that we've been noticing. But watch what happens to him. Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, "Look, my master has spared Naaman, the Syrian, while not receiving from his hands what he brought. But as the Lord lives, I will run after him. Take something from him." And so Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw him running after him, he got down from his chariot to meet him. And he said, "Is all well?" That literally is translated shalom. So now the Syrian is using Hebrew stuff. And he said to him, "Yes, all is well. My master sent me, saying, 'Indeed, just now, two young men of the sons of the prophets had come to me from the mountains of Ephraim. Please, give them a talent of silver and two changes of garments.'" So let me ask you guys a question. Is he being truthful? That's a lie. Okay? That's a total lie. And so Naaman said, "Hey, take two talents." And he said, "Here." And he urged him, and he's bound two talents of silver and two bags and two changes of garments, and he handed them to his servants. And they carried them on ahead of him. And when he came to the citadel, that means the capital or the fortress, he took them from their hand and he stored them away in the house. So at this particular point, only Gehazi and the guys that were with him, they didn't even know if Gehazi was, what was going on. He says, "Man, he let him get this for free. We got to go deal with this." So they go with him. He gets the stuff, he brings it back, and he hides it. He tucks it away, and he hides it. Now, tell me this guy isn't an idiot, okay? And so, he hides these, all of this stuff. In verse 23, so Naaman, where did I leave off? No, verse 22, right? No, verse 23. So Naaman says to him, "Please take two talents." He bound them. Okay, I'm sorry. We're way down further. We're verse 24. And when he came to the citadel, we're at verse 25. Yeah, sheesh. We're moving quickly. And so he went in and he stood before his master Elisha, and he said to him, Elisha says, "Where'd you go, Gehazi? Where you been, buddy?" Now, it's obviously Elisha already knows. Now, think this through with me, you guys. Gehazi hangs around with Elisha. Elisha knows stuff. God tells Elisha things all the time. Can you imagine? He's sitting there. Elisha goes, "Whoa, the king just tore his clothes. There's some dude up there that needs to be healed of leprosy. And he's going to come here. So send a note up there to get him down here." And Gehazi's going, "Dude, how did you know this stuff? God speaks to me. Wow." Now, what was he thinking to try to go and do something stupid like this with a guy that knows stuff all the time? And then, in comes Gehazi, and Elisha says, "Hey, bro, where you been? What you been up to?" Can you imagine trying to pull a fast one on a guy that knows everything? Do you remember doing that to your parents? They just knew, right? I mean, my dad just knew stuff, right? My son, our son, he couldn't get away with anything. My wife would find the stuff. He would hide things, and my wife would find it. She would just walk in the room and say, "Lord, show me anything I need to know." There it is, hidden, right? So it's just crazy. Justin would say, "You guys got a video camera in here?" Crazy. You don't try to pull fast ones on moms. And so then he says, "Your servant didn't go anywhere. I've just been here, hanging out." And he said to him, "Oh, Gehazi, what are you, an imbecile? Did not my heart go with you when the man turned back from his chariot to meet you, can you imagine what Gehazi is feeling right now? Oh, I blew this one, man. Is it time to receive money and to receive clothing and olive groves and vineyards and sheep and oxen and male and female servants? In other words, Gehazi, is it time to quit the ministry and build a business? Or are you not happy with just trusting God and laying and doing the work of God, doing the work of ministry full-time, working with me? Or is it time to sink your roots down? It's not time to do that yet. And so he says to him, so here's the deal, buddy. Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and your descendants forever. And he went out from his presence leprous, as white as snow. So what a man sows, that will he also reap. So he gave him a chance to repent. He did not take that opportunity. Where you been? Nowhere. Well, just been hanging out here. If he would have repented, I bet you everything would be different at this particular point. But he refuses. And he says, okay, buddy, well, here's the deal. Unfortunately, you know, I know what you did, and you blew the whole thing, bro. You just messed everything all up. And so here's the deal. Because of that, the leprosy that was cleansed from him is now going to cling to you and to your descendants, to your kids, your grandkids. There's going to be leprosy in your family forever because of this little mistake you made. Huge mistake, actually. So that seems like, wow, quite, you know, extreme. Do you guys know that in the New Testament, Elijah is mentioned many times, but Elisha is only mentioned one time. You remember the story in Luke chapter 4, Jesus goes back to Nazareth. Remember that whole story? He stands up and they say, hey, would you read? And he opens up the book and he opens it up and he begins to read. And he talks about, you know, his ministry, and he says, and this is being fulfilled in your presence today. And then he sits back down and they look at him and say, wow, that guy's amazing. But isn't he Joseph's son? How could he know such stuff? And then Jesus stands up and he goes, you guys are probably going to say, why don't you do the miracles that you've done in Capernaum here? And then he says, remember, he says, well, a prophet is not going to be welcome in his own hometown. Then he does two things. He does something very radical. And he says, do you remember Elisha who healed Naaman, even though there were many others that had leprosy, but he heals Naaman? Why did he choose that? Because Naaman is a Gentile. So here he stands in a Jewish synagogue talking about God showing grace to a Gentile. Be thankful that Naaman was a Gentile. So what is this whole thing? Where do we fit? We see this amazing story. It's kind of fun, right? Look at this and see how this all goes down. But why was the consequence so severe to Gehazi? Well, it revealed, this little episode revealed the content of Gehazi's heart. His heart was already starting to fall away. So this shows that even Elisha had problems with his ministry team. But this little episode, what? He had all that money and he didn't take anything? Out of his heart begins to show, we begin to see something. This little episode, all it did was reveal the content of Gehazi's heart. He pursues it, goes after it to get it, gets it, thinking, yes, I've got it. I wanted this. I coveted it. And because of what I coveted, because I wanted, I finally got it, and he got it. And so, but why such a severe punishment? Well, let me just explain to you guys what's going on behind the scenes here. Really and truly, we're all in this story. Because here's the deal. Each one of us, if you are a Christian, I can tell you, you're in the story. If not, you're in the process of the story. You're still in it. But each one of us that have given our lives to Jesus Christ, we had leprosy. Sin, very similar to leprosy. Small, starts off small, begins to eat away. Especially in this particular one, pride even. For Naaman, he was a prideful, arrogant guy. I can relate to this guy because that's probably me. And that's why, you know, I kind of like this guy, you know, proud and arrogant, and yet covering up, hiding my sinful disease. Trying to cover it up, masking it with a big smile on the face, masking it with a group of people hanging around you all the time. But yet, underneath what you try to hide, your life's falling apart. Maybe some of you have been there. Maybe you remember those days. And so you cover it up and you hide it. But deep down inside, you know it's gnawing away. It's chewing up. It begins to, the emptiness gnaws, the loneliness gnaws, the weight and the guilt of sin gnaws away. But we cover it up and we put up a good front and let everybody think that we've got it all together, just like Naaman. Until finally you come to a place where some faithful person says, oh, if only you could meet the prophet from Israel. You remember that day? Some faithful person in a situation who was not afraid to be a good witness in your life, in my life. Somebody that was willing to be bold enough to say, I know somebody that can help you. Now see, what's interesting is in the end, we have two servants, a servant girl and a servant to Elijah Gehazi. Who do you think ended up on the good side of this story? The servant girl who was kidnapped from her home but put into a secular environment, and we got another one who's working as the right-hand man of Elisha. And the servant girl was faithful to the Lord, where Gehazi was not. Interesting, isn't it? We'll probably meet her when we get to heaven someday, but I don't think you're going to meet Gehazi. Interesting. But here, some faithful person told you, oh, I'd like to introduce you. If only you could meet the prophet from Israel. Do you remember the day that we come to him? Understand, this miracle that we received, this healing that we received, you can't buy it, even though we might have tried. Well, I'll just go to church and put money in the offering basket. That'll do it. And, you know, I'll just do good works. And that'll get it for me. I'll just show up and I'll help build the building. I'll be an usher. Whatever it might be. Some good work. I'll read my Bible. Just tell me what to do, Pastor, and I'll do it. And that'll get me healed. That'll take care of this emptiness that's gnawing away in my life. But you can't buy it. It's a gift. It is the free gift of God whereby we must humbly receive it. See, in our story, I can so relate to this guy because, first of all, he lost his temper because it didn't happen the way he wanted it to. There's got to be more roads that lead to God than just this one. Going to the Jordan. How stupid is that? Putting my faith and dipping in this stupid water. Isn't it interesting? There's how many roads lead to this? Couldn't I do it when I'm up here in Syria, for crying out loud? Don't all roads lead to God? Interesting. And so he lost his temper, but then he lost his leprosy. And that's very, very interesting. You know, he lost his temper, then he lost his pride. When somebody else confronted him and said, dude, what's wrong with you, man? Look at the mess you've made of your life. Oh, I remember when my junior high youth pastor, Jay White Harris, said to me, Rob, what do you have that you're so afraid of losing? I mean, look at the mess you've got made out of your life. I was only in junior high. He says, what are you afraid to lose? So in order to receive this gift from God, we have to get rid of this prideful arrogance that we think that we can do something to get it. You remember those days? And then we humbly just say, okay, I'll bow down in the Jordan. I'll do what it is that he's asked me. I'll believe by faith that that's what I'm supposed to do. And at the moment, by faith, we humbly received, we were born again. And from that moment, we were instantly changed. You can remember going to that point and all the frustration and all the anxiety and all of the stress. And then you remember what happened after the moment that you were healed from your leprous disease of sin. Bam! Your everything changed. The joy of the Lord, a 32-mile ride somewhere, was like a 5-minute window of time. To where then you come back and you say, Lord, thank you. And see, here's the deal. He says, let me pay you. And we as Christians try to do that. after we've received the gift, we try to say, okay, let me just do something to pay you back. And Jesus says, no, it's a free gift. What part of gift don't you understand? You just have a relationship with me, and out of that, I'll let you do stuff. But you don't owe me. See, when Gehazi went to get it, he gave Naaman the idea that the gift could be purchased. He ruined the picture. He ruined this whole picture that God was at work showing Naaman, it's a gift. It's a relationship with me. Your healing is a free gift, not of works, lest someone could boast about it and brag about it, as we are told in Ephesians. It's a free gift. When Gehazi went and took something from him, he ruined the picture. That's why he suffered such a severe consequence. That's why God said, no, you ruined the picture, dude. And for that, you're going to pay, because I wanted him to see. Now, do you think that Naaman heard about Gehazi's leprosy? I'll bet you the word got up there. Because I'll bet you, if the truth was known, Naaman paid a couple more visits back into the land of Israel because he loved it so much. He had to have heard about it. But it messed up the picture. Just as when Moses, when God told Moses the second time when the children of Israel needed water, speak to the mountain this time. It's already been struck once. Now you speak to it by faith, and it will give you the water you need. And Moses whacked the rock. Remember what happened? Ah, you ruined the picture. It was a picture about the grace of God, that Jesus was killed once. Now we just receive by faith. Moses got his hand whacked. You're not going in, dude. And so when somebody messes up these beautiful pictures of the grace of God, there's a severe consequence for it, you see? And so an amazing, amazing picture that we get to see of this little thing called, you know, Naaman, the guy that went in to be healed. But let's ask one more question, and I'll let you get out of here. I kind of pondered on this. Why did Elisha, excuse me, not go to the door to meet him the first time? I was looking at that going, wow. You know, some big gun, important person comes to our house, we want to go there and, here, take the camera, take a picture. You know, we want our picture taken with him, right? Got to hang that on the wall. Why? This shows you something about the character of Elisha. Elisha knew what was going down, I think, and he also maybe knew even in his own heart something. But at this point, he says, this guy's coming down here with his big entourage. He's so full of pride, so full of arrogance. He needs to be humbled. I believe that's a part of it. Maybe. We aren't told which servant was the one that met him at the door. Might have been Gehazi, probably. If it was Gehazi, was this Gehazi's opportunity to see how a proud, arrogant man gets humbled? And maybe it was God trying to say, Gehazi, better keep your eyes open, buddy, because you're starting to get full of pride. And maybe even, I'm wondering, you know, could it even be Elisha himself saying, you know what? I could really get into this attention here. Having a big, important gun, the number two man in the nation of Syria, right under the king, coming to see me. Maybe Elisha himself knew the potential in himself to want that kind of prestige. And so he says, you go talk to him, because, you know, my pride, my flesh would love this. I don't know the answer. I don't know why. Maybe it's all of the above. Maybe you've got a few answers to throw in there yourself. But it is interesting that Elisha was in tune with God, and he didn't just run out to meet him, because God was at work in this man's life. This guy is born again, and he was never the same from that day forward. And what a beautiful picture when we look at how, you know, this whole thing goes down, and what a beautiful picture of how it is for me and for you. I mean, this is how, you know, God touched my life. I mean, I can totally relate with Naaman in this picture. But you know what? God forbid now, for all of us that are sitting here, that we ever become Gehazi. We got to make sure that we stay on the side of Elisha and Naaman, never forget the ugly disease that we had, lest we become Gehazi and suffer that kind of consequence, you see. So, beautiful picture, one that Jesus referred to in the book of Luke. It's radical. Now you know the whole story behind that. When he referred to this particular story, is because he saved a Gentile, of which was just the beginning of things to come, which is where we are at right now. Gentile saved by the grace of God because of our faith in the prophet from Israel. Pretty radical. Let's pray, you guys. Lord, we thank you for your word. Thank you for what you've shown us tonight. Beautiful picture, beautiful image. And I pray, Lord, that if any of us are here tonight, and maybe we find ourselves in the story somewhere, maybe we're like the servant girl in a place where we didn't choose. And yet we're battling, we're struggling. May we see it, Lord, as something that comes from your hand. May we be a faithful witness where you've planted us. Maybe, Lord, we're here tonight and we are looking back and we can see where we fit in the place of Naaman. We've been healed, been restored. Now we're born again and worshiping the King. Maybe, Lord, just maybe, there might be someone here tonight that is still trying to cover up their sin, trying to hide it, trying to look good on the outside, trying to put on the good show, good person, trying to purchase their way into the kingdom. And if that is you tonight, I want to encourage you to surrender and to humbly just accept the free gift that God has for you. And Lord, maybe if there's some of us here tonight that maybe we're battling because we're starting to become like Gehazi, starting to drift towards a wrong heart, starting to drift towards maybe losing that fire, losing that desire to serve and to be a part of what you're doing. May you convict us, Lord, before it's too late. Thank you, Lord, for all of the characters in this story. We commit it to you. Commit our hearts to you. In Jesus' name, amen.